started working, as Ramesh indicated, Wendell and I started working together about 35 years ago, a little more than that. And we've enjoyed, I think, a productive working relationship since that time. It has been a pleasure for me. It's been, I think, a very good working relationship between the two of us. There's no question that together we've accomplished more than either of us could have done separately. I appreciate very much all of Wendell's attributes and the things that have already been mentioned. And it's a pleasure for me to have a chance to talk about his work in the area of controlled drainage. As Gene indicated, Wendell took on in the 1960s and early 1970s the task of looking at the effect of agricultural production practices on groundwater and surface water quality. When I began working with him in the early 70s, his work became focused, or was becoming focused. He worked all through the state, but it was becoming focused on eastern North Carolina, and in particular on the practices and impacts that affected this coastal streams and estuaries. And there you see the species Gillum in his native habitat, examining plant life in the coastal streams near Caneta, North Carolina, and the soils therein. It's been, as I said, a real pleasure in working with Wendell all these years. One of his first experiments, Gene pointed out, actually it wasn't his first experiments, but one of the first experiments in drainage area had to do with quantifying the effect of agricultural management practices on groundwater and drainage water quality. Wendell will tell you that he went into that experiment thinking that the effect of those practices was pretty negligible. But working with Sterling Weed and his first graduate student, Bob Gambrell, shown there, they learned that there were significant nitrogen losses in drainage water from these poorly drained lands and very poorly drained lands in eastern North Carolina. Further, they quantified the status of the nitrogen in the profile and learned that in these very poorly drained soils, and soils classified as very poorly drained and poorly drained, that the horizons deeper than drain depth, deeper than about 4 to 4.5 feet, were reduced, and the nitrogen content, nitrate contents in those horizons were negligible. Learning about that is one thing. Trying to do something about it is something else. And Wendell's idea and his approach in all cases, as already been alluded to, is to do as much as we can to fix the problem. And he came up with the idea of, since these lower horizons were reduced, if we could somehow cause the drainage water to move through those lower horizons, we could perhaps reduce concentrations of nitrate in the drainage water and reduce the impact on surface and groundwaters. So that's the time that we started really working together. I was working on a controlled drainage and sub-irrigation project from the standpoint of water conservation and providing water for plant needs. And Wendell was interested in looking at the effect of controlled drainage on water quality. So we worked together along with Sterling Weed and graduate students to investigate the potential effect of controlled drainage on water quality in eastern North Carolina. That's Wendell changing the charts there. You can always tell in the slides, though you can't see his face, it has to be Wendell because he's got on 8 layers of clothing. When you go to the field with Wendell, you realize that if it's cold, you're going to take at least several extra garments just in case it's colder than he thinks it's going to be. And he doesn't like to be cold, and he isn't cold often because he always has enough clothes to prevent that. So that experiment went along quite smoothly. We collected data on field size units, controlled drainage. Some of the units where we put controls, as was shown in the previous slide, and backed the water up in the ditches as shown there. And then other fields were uncontrolled. Bob Gambrell was the graduate student working on the project, and you see him there in a learning experience. It's about 30 degrees outside. We learned after some heavy rainfall in the winter of 74 that the weirs were too high. We found that our method of putting in the weirs was quite good. You couldn't take them out, it was so good. So the method of lowering the weirs was to use the axe that he's holding there in his hand. I will say I don't think I've ever seen Wendell ask a graduate student to do anything that he wasn't prepared to do. But in this case, Bob had the learning experience in lowering the weir level for that case. I'm attempting now to cover this material in broad brush form. So I'm going to leave out some of the details and come back and pick up some of the important points that I think we should be aware of as we go forward a little later on. So keeping with that idea or approach, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. What we learned in that set of experiments was that controlled drainage could, on these poorly drained soils, reduce the drainage volume and the nitrate loss, the nitrogen loss, by a factor of about 50%. 3-year experiment done on field size units at the Tidewater Research Station. Not replicated plots, but the results were quite clear. This was good news. This meant there was a way of reducing the nitrogen contribution to the drainage waters, to the surface waters in eastern North Carolina. And there were a lot of people very interested in applying that, but there were also there was also need to replicate it, to look at it on other soils and other locations. So these experiments were repeated on farmer-operated fields, again, field-scale, field-size units, in several locations in eastern North Carolina. This particular installation was made in the early 1980s. We started in 1973, still working on experiments in the 1980s. This was one of the demonstration units. The reason I'm showing you this is a recent picture taken just this last spring. That system has been working continuously since about 1983 or 4, and is still being used on a continuous basis. We had the opportunity to cooperate with the ARS, Coy Doty and his group at Florence, South Carolina, group there, and also the NRCS on a watershed scale project, which looked at the effect of controlled drainage on a watershed scale. And we looked there at the water quality as well as the water conservation impacts. As the work continued, starting with those initial experiments in 1973, through the early 1980s, or through the mid-1980s, we had measured and evaluated the impact of controlled drainage on about 14 soils in eastern North Carolina. And the results were quite consistent. They're not quite as consistent as shown here. These are average data. But what they show is about a 45% decrease in nitrogen loss through the drains as a result of controlled drainage. That was true whether the systems were primarily subsurface drainage systems, the middle set of bars there, i.e. tile drainage, intensive subsurface drainage, or whether these systems were primarily surface drainage systems, open ditches placed 330 feet apart or so, the bars on the right. Notice the bars on the right are lower than the ones on the left, which means that the nitrogen loss in drainage systems is dependent on the drainage intensity, but the effect of controlled drainage is pretty much, on a percentage basis, was the same in both cases. Wendell had an important role on all of the studies. These studies were sponsored and conducted by different people, but he had an important role on all of those studies that were conducted during that time and since that had to do with controlled drainage. He also participated in field days on many, many task forces and committees that were addressing the question, how do we reduce the nitrogen load to the streams in eastern North Carolina? They were sensitive waters there, and there were significant problems, and Wendell was a key player in trying to address those issues, and controlled drainage became one of the accepted tools for addressing those issues. In summing that up, As a result of this work, controlled drainage was accepted in 1984 by the state of North Carolina and by the NRCS in North Carolina as a best management practice for controlling nitrogen and phosphorus losses from these lands. It was cost-shared by the state. They agreed to cost-share the installation of the practices for nutrient-sensitive waters. The cost share was expanded in 1986 to include the 17 coastal counties. NRCS funded 7 demonstration sites in 1984, and 5 of those sites we converted to research sites, or we added on the research component, which I'll show you results of a little bit later. The practice was became cost-shared by all counties in 1989. At the peak of the period where this practice was being installed, we had about 20,000 hectares per year being installed from 1985 through about 1990. In 1990, we had some other issues that sort of caused this to be pushed back a little bit, but it still remained a popular practice through the 1990s. The status, which is approximately the status now, is that there are in place structures and facilities to manage the drainage from about 420,000 acres in North Carolina of agricultural lands, and probably approximately 200,000 acres of forested land. And we conservatively estimate that if properly applied and used, some are not being now, but if properly applied and used, this would reduce the nitrogen outflows by more than 3 million pounds per year. I have to say, without any question, if not for Wendell Gillum, this would not have happened. There is no question about that. There were a number of people who played important roles, but if not for Gillum, this would not have happened. Others in other places found out about this problem. This slide looks like it comes from eastern North Carolina. It could come from the Midwest, but in fact it comes from a watershed that feeds the Venetian Lagoon in Italy, where they have lands that are very much like what we see in eastern North Carolina. And this is their experimental unit for testing the practice that they had heard that we had worked with, that Gillum had started in eastern North Carolina of controlled drainage. In recent years, we have become, recent being the last 10 years, or maybe 8 years, we've become more sensitive concerning the nitrogen issues in the Midwest. And particular, the effect of the drainage from 50 million acres of drained land in the Midwest on the nitrogen load to the Mississippi River, which is which has had an impact on the hypoxic zone that results in the Gulf of Mexico, not too far from here. The question is, and it has been proposed, that controlled drainage could be used, and we are working with that now, to reduce the nitrogen loads coming from those drained lands in the Midwest. We've worked for the last, since about 2002, with the Agricultural Drainage Management Systems Task Force, where the focus has been on applying methods to reduce nitrogen loads from the farmed lands in the Midwest, and our emphasis, of course, is on the potential application of controlled drainage or drainage water management to reduce the loads from these 50 million acres of tile-drained lands in that area. Others have done work in other places, and we know that it will work in other places. Norm Fauci in Ohio found about a 45% decrease in nitrogen loss when he looked at the effect of controlled drainage or drainage water management in Ohio. In Ontario, in Quebec, and in Sweden, Westrom in Sweden found that it got more than a 65% decrease in nitrogen loss when she applied controlled drainage on a plot scale. So the logical question in applying this in other places and continuing to push it forward, and has been, I don't mean to say this is anything new, it's been the logical question since the work started in the early 1970s, is what happens to the end? Our hypothesis originally was is depicted on this slide. We thought that the conventional drainage shown on the left and the reduced the controlled drainage shown on the right, we thought by applying controlled drainage we could raise the level of the reduced zone. We knew there was a reduced zone on these poorly drained soils from the earlier experiments of Gillum and colleagues, and graduate students and colleagues. We thought we could use controlled drainage to raise the elevation of that reduced zone, force more of the water through the reduced zone, and decrease the nitrogen content of the drainage water. That didn't work out that way. We got a 45% to 50% reduction in drainage, but that was due to the reduction in the drainage volume. The drainage concentration stayed about the same. So rather than answering the question of what happened to the nitrogen, we do know what happened to the nitrogen, but this issue raises yet a second question. Where does it go? Now we're wondering about where does the water go and where does the nitrogen go? To try to address those questions, let's back up and look at what I think are some critical factors that were present in the earlier studies, and in fact, I think all of the studies that we've conducted in eastern North Carolina. In the first place, they're done on field scale. And it turns out, I believe, that scale is of huge importance to this issue. The fields that we conducted the initial experiments on were 12 to 20 acres in size. That has advantages in that you could expect to be able to transfer directly from what we find on fields of that size to application, because the application is on the same size, on the same scale. It would not be the case if we did that on plot scale. Now that becomes important when you try to ask the question, where did the water go? And I've done a number of water balances and spent a lot of time trying to answer the question as to where the water goes. I'm here to tell you, and I don't have time to prove it to you, but I am certain it's the case, you cannot ascribe the difference in drainage to increases in ET. Part of the water does leave by evapotranspiration. Part of the extra water does leave by evapotranspiration. You can maybe account for 10% of the reduction of drainage by increase in ET. That's about what it looks like on a long-term average. The only way that I'm convinced, the only way of describing what, or of closing the water balance, is that water, that extra water, has to leave by seepage, either deep or lateral seepage. I don't have time to go into this analysis, so I'm going to try to summarize it in a couple of sentences. I could spend a half an hour talking about this slide, but I don't have that time. If you look at the lateral seepage from this 12-acre field, the maximum rate of lateral seepage for this particular 12-acre field is about a half a millimeter a day because of the size of the field and its relationship to the sinks and so forth. If you reduce this, if rather than looking at this on field scale, we tried to do this on plot scale, we could create 10 or 12 plots that were 100 feet long and 300 feet wide, and they would be meaningful in terms of scale. But if we did that, everything else remaining the same, the lateral seepage would be 10 times as great on a per unit area from each of those plots. I don't believe you can do meaningful controlled drainage experiments on plot scale unless you're certain you can isolate the plots with vertical barriers, and that's a very hard act. That's a very hard thing to do, to be certain with that. I think that is a significant issue. I think the only way that we can that I can make the water balance close is to assume, and I believe it's true, that most of the water leaves by deep seepage. That deep seepage may reoccur on a regional scale in the surface waters, but it leaves by deep seepage. So then the question is, and you can by considering deep seepage make the water balance close. Then the question is, what is in that water? But before going there, let me just quickly say that the rate of deep seepage depends on the conductivity of the sediments. There's a restricting layer below most of these fields, most of these poorly drained soils in eastern North Carolina and other places, that prevents water from moving rapidly in a vertical direction. I've called the conductivity of that K sub V. If you use water balance models. I use DrainMod. These are results of 50-year simulations The brown curve there shows how the average annual drainage amount would vary as this KCV, which controls the deep seepage rate, increases. As that increases, the seepage gets greater and the drainage amount gets lower. The green curve shows the same relationship if you're under controlled drainage or drainage water management. In that case, you've built up a higher head and the seepage is greater. The blue curve shows the percentage reduction of drainage due to the drainage water management or due to controlled drainage. And you see, going from case of V equals zero, where seepage is zero, to case of V equal 0.05, where the seepage is higher, results in a difference in the effect of controlled drainage. The effect of controlled drainage is about 10% reduction in the drainage rate when you have zero case of V. It's about 50% reduction in the drainage volumes when you have a higher case of V. So I believe that the result of controlled drainage, the reason we get the big impact of controlled drainage on drainage amounts is because of seepage. It's, in most cases, I think, mostly vertical. Then the question is, what's in the water? And there, I'm going back to the experiments in the early 70s. That's the longest auger I've ever seen. You see the top of it way up to the top? That is a long auger. OSHA wasn't on board. I don't think OSHA existed at that time, but if they did, they probably wouldn't have known. And then the OSHA wasn't there when we used the stepladder to pound in those piezometers that are screened at different depths for sampling the water and the groundwater. The reason for these observations was to determine what the characteristics of the water is at depth. And I can't overemphasize the amount of effort and care that was taken in determining that factor. What is in the drainage water as it escapes, going either vertically or laterally? EH measurements were made, and basically what they show is that the zones were reduced below about a 4-foot depth. That means that the water that seeps through that zone below that depth, which is, I think, the only way the water could get out, that water that was not coming out the drains, that means that it was reduced as it moved through those sediments. It was a standard practice on all our experiments to have these piezometers screened at different depths that you can see in this field, and was the case in many of the other fields. Now, just for a minute, I want to look at the results of this slide. I won't have time to do this justice, but this shows results from five other fields. These were the five demonstration sites that were instrumented and monitored over a 2-year period. And it shows, in each case, we had controlled drainage versus side-by-side with drainage, again, on field scale. The right-hand column shows the percent reduction of drainage amounts, which was about equal to the, in this case, it's the percent reduction of the nitrogen loss, which is about equal to the percent reduction in drainage amounts. And it varied from a high of 56 to a low of 18%. The reason it varied from over that range was because the seepage varied over that range. And the reason the seepage varies over that range is it's a site-dependent factor. It's dependent on the conductivities and the sources and sinks and the location of those sinks. And so you would expect that variation. You find it, we found it when we did field-scale experiments we would have been confused, I think, we wouldn't have been able to interpret it on plot-scale experiments. So, let me leave this technical issue with the following observation. There was another set of experiments, Wendell, that we were conducting at the same time of those 73 experiments. Those were at the Kinston Research Station, where we had fields that were on moderately well-drained soils. And those soils really wouldn't have probably had drainage systems, except they'd been used for raising tobacco, which is very sensitive to wet conditions, and so they put in drainage systems. We went in and put controlled drainage systems there, again, controlled the water level so that the drainage had to get up to within about a foot of the surface before it could drain. And the results were that we decreased the nitrogen loss through the drains by 85%. But when Wendell examined the data so far as the nitrogen loss in that seepage water that had to be taken place, It was not through reduced zones. It was going out of the system somewhere. We didn't know where, but it certainly was not being reduced. Wendell's comment, which I think is a nice segue into the papers that will follow mine, turns out on this session, it does not prevent entry. This practice on these soils, controlled drainage on these moderately well-drained soils, does not prevent entry of nitrogen into surface waters. However, it would increase the chance of nitrogen being lost downstream, downslope, in riparian areas, which is where he went after this, where he was already doing work in that area and continued work in that area for many years. I want to close with just a few comments about the characteristics of the species Gillum, which Gene has already alluded to, and one of them is, without question, Wendell's a leader. He gets things done. There's a comedian these days who's byword is get her done. I think that they were thinking about Wendell when he developed that. If you want a job done, Wendell will get it done if he's involved. He's been a leader in that respect at the university, his community, and his church. Without any question, he's known by all of his friends. He and Shirley are among the most generous people I know. They're generous with their time. They're generous with their resources. They're great friends to have. They're great neighbors and great community. Great for the community and very much appreciated in the community as well as at all levels, university as well as the community at large. Gene referred to him being persistent. He is persistent. We play golf together. We try to do that as often as we can. I've seen Wendell hit a hole in one. Pure talent, he tells me. Ball wandered across the green like a drunk sailor and fell in the hole. But he has had great success. I've seen that. I've also seen him hit 9 straight balls into a water hazard, knowing that everyone, as long as there's a ball in this bag, I'm going to get across this water hazard. Is what he was saying to himself. Gene and I were standing on the side laughing all the time. Patience is not his greatest virtue. Another one that I didn't write down was, if you don't want to know his opinion, don't ask him. He is occasionally wrong, but he is rarely in doubt. I saw him convince one of our colleagues that he had played the golf course before. The man said to me, Wendell keeps telling me I've played this golf. I know I must have played it because Wendell said he played it with me. Well, it turned out it was another person that Wendell had played that golf course with. But this person was absolutely convinced. Wendell is, when he's wrong, he may be wrong occasionally, but he is rarely in doubt. One of Wendell's qualities that we all of us recognize is he enjoys working with other people. We all benefit by his contribution. He enjoys that, I think, more than practically anything, and particularly with students. I've never been to Wendell's house in Texas. I don't know if it looks like this. I do know this. If Wendell was the lord of the manor at this 17th century French chateau, that all the neighbors would be welcome, and the peasants would live better than probably any set of peasants in the country. Thank you very much. Thank you, Wendell, for